Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
There we go. And we are live with the Coffee with Karen. So, a cup of positivity with just a sprinkling of woo-woo, or we've been sort of adding a few tablespoons, I think, more these days, but never mind. So each week, my guests tend to be either coaches, consultants, therapists, healers, whether that's focusing on the mental, the physical, the spiritual perspective, or in general, the majority of people, I think, these days tend to be realizing that you've got to treat the whole person and they have more of a holistic approach. Well, my guests do anyway. So this week I've got a very special guest with me. So Chris, if you would like to share with the audience a little bit about who you are, what you do, and share a bit of your story, please.
Okay, so my name's Chris Freer. I'm approaching my 63rd birthday this month. I'm the father of four amazing children, and I've got 3 3/4 grandchildren. Married to the love of my life.
Hang on, I'm a bit slow today, am I? What do you mean three?
Well, my eldest daughter is about to give birth to a second child.
Any day, right?
I think it's a few weeks to go.
Hopefully.
I'm married to the love of my life now, who I met in 2010. We married in 2016. And I'm someone who lives what I would consider to be a proactive life with a chronic, incurable condition called multiple sclerosis.
Wow. Now, for those listening, from what they perceive MS to be or not, what tends to be the general outlook for MS sufferers these days, Chris?
Well, I mean, I'm going to start to answer that question by saying that whenever you hear of anything in the news with regard to multiple sclerosis and other chronic conditions, but, you know, particularly multiple sclerosis, they always prefix whatever they're going to say, whatever story they're going to give, is people suffering with. And, you know, I'm not saying that there's an element of pain and difficulty with this condition, but I think it sets people up with a narrative. Number one, it's incurable. Yes, that's true at this moment in time. Two, it's progressive, and most people think that multiple sclerosis is life shortening. You will end up definitely in a wheelchair, probably bed bound, and then die, you know. And I'm trying to create a different narrative, really. I think yes, it can be all them things if you let it. You know, but if you change your mindset and you change your approach, because, you know, this is a controversial thing I'm about to say to you. Number one, I'm going to say right at the beginning of this, I am not a health professional, okay? Right? And I'm not encouraging anyone to not follow the advice of their health professional. But I'm hoping after I've talked, and you've heard what I've got to say, you know, it will open up the possibility of conversation with your health professional about the potential for alternative approaches, which may well benefit your drug approach as well, you know. So, yeah.
It's interesting that, I'm sure you've met a lot of people that, I've been given the same, you know, quote unquote diagnosis as you.
Yes.
And, you know, the way I see a lot of things these days is that, you know, the power of the mind is phenomenal anyway. We know that.
Yes.
But it's amazing how much power we give away to people in a white coat and how a diagnosis can affect us. And then if we own that diagnosis, then we can sort of go downhill rapidly rather than, you know, maybe not so much owning it and looking at the positives and the alternatives. Have you noticed things along those lines?
Absolutely. You know, and I think when I go into my story, if you like, and my journey, which is a tale of two halves, I believe. I'm living in the second half at this moment in time. People will understand why and where I'm coming from. I've lived with this condition for 20 years now. I've been diagnosed for 20 years, although I believe I had it for a number of years before I found out what was ailing me, if you like.
Ah.
And if you've got a little bit of time, I'd love to share that story with you, yeah?
Absolutely. I would love to hear the story.
Okay. So I've been a businessman, I suppose, for the majority of my working life. And my perception of happiness was the amount of money that I had in my bank account and the amount of holidays that I was having every year and the size of my house, if you like. And I pushed myself extremely hard. You know, I was in the licensed trade. At my height, I had four pubs and a couple of clubs on the go. I had a reasonably good lifestyle. You know, they were all cash businesses, which is very nice, isn't it? But I started to experience weird and wonderful things happening to me. Like, you know, all of a sudden I'd be desperate to go to the toilet, or for no apparent reason, I'd fall over, or I'd get pain in my back, or get really confused about things and couldn't feel my hands and stuff like that. And I'd go to see my GP to be told that the symptoms that I was experiencing were all stress related. You know, it's your lifestyle. It's stress, you know. Now, I kind of understood that, but I didn't particularly feel that stressed per se, if you like, mm-hmm. You know. But I was working 16 hours a day. I was being told by people that cared about me, if I carry on going the way I am, I'm going to make myself ill. And I used to, there's someone at the bloody door now. Yeah,
no problem.
Never so sorry about that.
No, don't. This is the beauty. We can
okay.
Editing.
Okay. So I was being told by people that cared about me, if I carry on going the way I am, I'm going to make myself ill. And I used to poo-poo that. I used to say to them, look, you know, illness is something that happens to someone else. It don't happen to me. I'm indestructible, you know. And I had a bit of a Superman kind of outlook on life, you know, that it, you know, illness happened to someone else, not me. You know, I can keep going doing what I'm doing, you know. And we got to 2002 it was, and it was when we were in the World Cup, and it was in Asia,
right?
And I become really ill. I collapsed, and I got carted off to hospital, and that started my journey towards knowing what was actually going on in my body. And after an MRI scan and a lumbar puncture,
wow,
I was told that I had multiple cirrhosis. I was told to, you know, go and live my life. We've got disease modifying drugs that will slow the progress of the condition down, and it probably won't affect you for 20 years, you know, so go off and live your life. Don't do too much exercise. Don't tax yourself too much. And definitely don't go and visit Dr. Google. She's, the exact thing that I did.
As I'm sure we all would.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we all know what search engines are like, if you like. And unwittingly, we put in, really, in the search engine, what we want to find. And I just found horrendous stories around this condition. And I mean horrendous stories around this condition. And it set off anxiety in me. You know, I started to really worry about the future. I started to worry about my children that were quite young then. I was also worrying about maintaining my wife of the time, because she had very expensive taste. And I became extremely anxious about how I was going to juggle all these balls, because I didn't want my life to change. But it did. You know, it did in a big way. And while this is something that happens to many people that get diagnosed with chronic conditions, and I have absolutely no animosity towards my first wife at all. You know, she gave me 4 amazing units that I'm so proud of. But she decided that she didn't want a life with someone who was ill, and she started divorce proceedings against me.
Ouch.
Yeah, which hurt. And I didn't understand it. But it was happening, and it set off this process of depression. And in May 2007, I woke up one morning in a room that I was renting above a pub. And I looked out and I thought, you know, it's a really beautiful day. Right? Today is a really good day to end my life.
Wow.
Because I had nothing to offer anybody. I had no life. I had a life of pain, disability, immobility, and early death, so I might as well speed it up. And it made absolute sense to me that today was the last day that I was going to be on this planet.
Oh, my goodness.
And I went out and I had a serious attempt at chucking myself under a lorry, basically, you know. I don't know why I chose that route, but I did. It still affects me when I think, you know, the amount of times I've spoken about this, I still can be there at the side of that road. And I realized what saved me that day was compassion. And it wasn't compassion for me. It wasn't compassion for my children. It wasn't compassion for anybody other than the lorry driver whose wills I intended to hurl myself under. And the thought I had was, what's this going to do to him?
Right.
And I hesitated. And instead of going under the front of the lorry, fortunately, and I say fortunately, I bounced off the side of the building. I sort of glanced. I mean, it hurts. Don't get me wrong, it hurt. But I glanced off the side of the lorry, and I was alive.
Wow. And I mean, for a lot of people, I mean, that's you know, and I sadly have lost people where they've come to that decision where they think there really is no way out. And for somebody who hasn't, that's a really difficult thing to understand, right? Well, because people will say, oh, you know, that's selfish, or that's this, because you know people aren't thinking about the how people are going to deal with it. But obviously the truth is that you're not really thinking, are you? You're not thinking in a rational way, because otherwise you wouldn't do it. And that's the weird conundrum of people who take their own lives. You're not well. You're quite clearly not well. When we're well, obviously we're not going to do it. And it's such a difficult thing for people to get their head around. And that's pretty extraordinary. What I'm hearing from you is that it really was, because you still hurt yourself, a split second decision to actually think, oh, maybe this is a little bit unfair on the driver, because, you know, what is he going to have to deal with? I mean, you went through this day, you were quite prepared that's what you were going to do. And I think people can obviously understand with when there is been you've been told that it's, at the end of the day, they're telling you it's a terminal condition and there's no hope, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. What do you think, how do you think that moment's decision came to actually stop you?
I think when I look at the work I do now, and the work, and actually the way that I kind of conducted my life before, I always had quite a lot of compassion for other people, and I wanted to, I'm going to use that word, help them be, you know, or help them get what they, you know what I mean? I had that empathy with people. And I think that's what came through for me. I think that's why all of a sudden I was concerned about him and not me. I mean, honestly, when you're in that state, you're not thinking of anything. It's just nothingness, because you don't think you're worth anything. You don't think anybody cares about you. In fact, you think it would be a benefit that you're not here. And what I will say right here, right now, to anybody that's listening to this that is faced with that situation, or if they know someone who's faced with that situation, seek help, because there's always someone to talk to there, and you will be missed, you are loved, and you can get help. But for me, and this is not an excuse, but also, I mean, the disease-modifying drugs that I'd been put on, which are very powerful, have serious side effects.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And one of the side effects of the drug that I was on was suicidal tendencies. God, I didn't read. I didn't read any of the side of it. You know, not
who
many
does? Who know. Does, Chris? If we were to read every, you wouldn't take anything, because it could cause this. It could give you this. Yeah. It could give you this.
In fact, the drug that I was on has been withdrawn in America because too many people were completing their suicidal attempts, you see.
There you go.
So that day came and it kind of sowed a seed in my mind, because I'm here for a reason. I am here for a reason. Yeah. For me, on my MS journey, if you like, I got sectioned. I got put under the care of care in the community. But I knew that I needed to find a different way, you know, and I was searching for that alternative way of doing things. I never really had been a pharmaceutical kind of person, if you like. I was taking drugs and stuff like that, but before that I was not really into that sort of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just continued to get worse, and we got to 2008 and I was quite ill, and my neurologist ordered an enhanced MRI scan for me, which is where they put a dye into your vein and it highlights all the lesions and stuff like that. We got the results back and he told me that, you know, there's a number of new lesions, active lesions in your brain. You've now reached the secondary progressive stage of this condition, and disease modifying drugs are not going to work for you. They're not going to slow down the progression of this. All we can do is give you pain management drugs like baclofen, gabapentin, pregabalin, which again didn't really have a particularly good effect on me, but I did take them for a while. And he also told me that the way that this illness was progressing, I would be in a wheelchair by 2012. And bearing your mental health, it would be a good idea if you got your head round that and accepted it. Which I did. I did accept it. You know, and I'm divorced. Interestingly, one by one, my children came to live with me, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
Really good. And something happened to me in 2010, and I can only describe this as the love of my life appeared, really. And whilst I was on this journey of change and learning and stuff like that, she brought this new dimension into my life, really. And it made me realise that I could be loved. And I also realised that I'd never loved myself. I'd never had any compassion for me, right, ever. And it opened doors in my mind to new possibilities. And I really became driven, I think. I was going to use the word passionate, but I think I became driven about learning about how our mind works and how our thoughts have so much power over what's going on within our body, and how we can retrain our mind and we can see things in different ways, you know. So, to get back to my MS journey, I would go and see my neurologist on a yearly basis. And anyone that's watching this, you know, in the hospital that I have to attend, they always put you in the surgery that's furthest away from the car park. Like all the people that have got mobility issues or broken bones, it's in the clinic furthest away from the car park.
Really well thought out, that, right?
Yeah. So every year I was going there in my wheelchair, turning up, How are you? There's no changes, no developments, there's no breakthroughs. See you in a year's time. You know, do you want any pain management? No, thank you. Yeah. But all the time I'm learning and I'm learning and I'm researching and I'm changing things and I'm tweaking things in my life, you know, in my diet, in my thinking, in the way that I approach the way that I'm living, you know. And I'm finding that I'm getting movement back into my, it started with my toes, really. And then I started to learn how to crawl again. And then I started to be able to strengthen my legs a bit. And as a personal trainer, you will understand this, you know, that if you sit on your backside, your muscles are going to waste.
Yep.
And that was the advice that I was given right at the beginning of my journey. You know, don't exercise too much because it's not probably going to be good for you. And I know the thinking is changing now, but that was the thinking back then. Now, the last time I saw my neurologist, he was a lovely man, and I've got nothing against him. Trust me, I haven't, but I don't see him anymore. I see my MS nurses, who are really positive and happy about my journey. But the last time I saw him, I walked into his surgery in 2017. And he looked at me with shock. You know, if he had false teeth, I think they would have fallen out on his desk, because he went, "What drugs have I put you on? What drugs is it?" And I went, "Well, I'm not on any drugs, am I? What are you doing? You look like you're getting better." And I told him. And he really wasn't that interested, which is okay. Again, it's okay.
It is,
I think, because unfortunately, and because of the arenas that I'm in now, I will say that there are a huge number of health professionals coming forward now that are realizing the power of lifestyle choice. I'm not going to use the word medicine, which is used a lot, lifestyle medicine. I'm going to use the word lifestyle choice and the power it has over creating your best health. Yeah. So, you know, my neurology is pretty old school, and it's only what they've learned in medical school. You know, so, you know, that's okay. But like I say, my journey is one of, I want to be a better version of me today than I was yesterday. It's not easy. I have to turn up every day and do my exercises and my stretching and everything. And if I don't, I know about it. I fall over still. But that's a good thing. Because I used to fall over a lot. And I got really good at it. Now when I fall over, I hurt me bleeding self. You know, but it's just a reminder of how far I've come. For me, you know, it's and you know this, it's your perception of what's going on. And that's how it's going to affect you.
Totally.
Yeah. So there's my little bio on my journey with a chronic illness.
My goodness. I mean, it's that's pretty amazing, because, and you're right, I do believe everything really is down to perception, how you view your world, because so many other people would have totally owned what they've been told, accepted that there's nothing else to try, and would have just and that's what you're going to do, you're just going to wither away and die. But it sounds like with and it's quite interesting that you said it was almost, it sounds like it was tied to you meeting the love of your life. So you were happier in yourself. Which, do you think that was the sort of start of the change? So again, how you felt changed inside.
Yeah, I think I think she opened up a world, a new, look, in your title here, you've got woo-woo somewhere, haven't you?
Yeah.
And I sometimes think that a lot of the stuff that I talk about, she thinks is a bit woo-woo. Yeah. But I think it's just really love. I think love is the most powerful emotion that human beings possess. And that saying, love conquers all, is so true.
Yeah. Underestimated.
Oh God. And I think that in modern society, we're not taught that. We're actually encouraged not to feel like that because it's some kind of selfish behavior or sycophantic behavior or something. Do you get what I mean?
Or it will be taken away if you feel it too much.
Yeah, it's discouraged.
But the fear of losing it.
Yeah, it's discouraged.
Yeah, definitely. But we can't find love. We can't get love. We can't even give love because we are love.
Yes. And we have to love ourselves. You know, you have to be comfortable in your own skin, and I wasn't, and I am now. If you, you know, there's still work to be done. I'm still a work in progress. I'm still, you know, bomb. But actually, I like myself now.
I like you too, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you.
So now, I mean, that is a pretty powerful, pretty incredibly powerful story. So now you are trying to help others. So can you share a little bit about what you do now, where you can inspire others for change and what you actually do?
Okay. Start with that. Number one, I would love to impose the new, like, take the help word out.
Okay. Yeah.
Empower word back in.
Love that. Yes.
Because I think, you know, it's that analogy of, like, give a man a fish and he feeds his family for a day.
Totally.
But if you teach them, if you coach them, if you provide solutions to the obstacles that they find that are being created by their limiting beliefs from the things that they've learned in the past, and it's all in their subconscious and all that, if you provide solutions to people for those things, they can move forward from the limiting place that they're at. Often it's dealing with trauma. You know, a traumatic, you know, one person's trauma is another's, like, you know, nothingness sort of thing. It's how you perceive that thing at the time is how it affects you. You know, and if you're told you're crap and you believe it, you're going to be crap for the rest of your life, kind of thing, or useless or whatever, you know, whatever. So, yeah, what I do is I work as a therapist. My passion is to empower as many people as I possibly can towards their best health. In society today, we have an explosion of chronic illness. Yeah, multiple sclerosis is one of them, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, Crohn's, fibromyalgia, ME, the list is endless and growing, you know, because, you know, they love to label a condition because there's a pill for every ill, isn't there?
Yeah. And again, it's owning, it's people, when people identify rather than, you know, this is it's a temporary, or it could be a temporary
you know, thing that they're going through, they seem to just sort of take ownership and identify as the disease or as the ailment. And then when that, I mean, that's really all encompassing, isn't it? If they totally own it mentally, physically, and spiritually, you know, it's a long way out from there.
My biggest change, came, you know, and I suppose we can call it my light bulb moment, if you like, was when I realised that, number one, I can't give you multiple cirrhosis. I can't give it to anybody out in the street. I'm not infectious. And I didn't catch it. Didn't catch it like you catch the flu or you catch a cold or you catch measles. So if I didn't catch it, and I will agree that there are certain elements of possibly childhood illnesses and stuff like that that do come into play in certain conditions, right? I accept that. But fundamentally, through the choices that I made in my life, I created this condition. Yeah? So if I created it, I can kind of uncreate it as well.
There you go. So you took responsibility for your own health. And that in itself is empowering, isn't it? Because if it was just something that you got, you would not know how to unget it. Yeah. Whereas when it's something that you've created, at the end of the day, something's has happened. And even, yes, it's an autoimmune. Yes, they'll say it could be genetic, whatever they say. But the fact is something has changed through what you've consumed, whether that's food or toxins, you know, the both, over a period of time has brought you to a situation where the body is attacking itself, right?
Absolutely. You got that in one. And you used the word genetics earlier. And I think, and, you know, this is where I may well get a little bit controversial, if you like. You know, and I don't want to scare you at all.
Can't scare me.
But genetics, in my opinion, and from what I've learned about genetics, yes, you can be predisposed to something, but fundamentally, genes are just switches that you can choose to either switch on or switch off through the choices that you make, you know, what you consume, what you put in your body, how you do, blah, 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 all of that, yeah? So it's not set in stone that you are going to be whatever, you know, obese, any of these things, because, you know, you've got a choice, right? And that's what people don't realise, because their choice has been taken away.
Well, it's a lot easier, isn't it? It would be easier if there was a monster under the bed, do you know what I mean, to blame. It would be easier if there was something outside of themselves to blame, that the reason I've got this is because of this, and then it's not my fault, which is disempowering. Because when, like you said, things changed when you took ownership and you took responsibility and made a decision that actually I'm going to change this, you were empowered, because you realized, you had the realization that actually, you know, I might not be able to stop it in its tracks, but I can change the way I view it. And you have quite clearly changed the way it has reacted with, you know, the ailment has actually reacted with you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I view multiple cirrhosis as my best friend. And I've kind of separated it out of my body now. I mean, yes, it is in my body. Yes, I know all that, right? But I view it as my best friend. And you know that mate that you don't have to see for a couple of years, 3 years, whatever, 5 years. You don't have to see them. But when you meet them, when you know, that really best friend, right? That when you see them, you just start up from where you left off, right? Mm-hmm. Well, my best friend called multiple sclerosis, when it comes back and visits me, it bites me on the arse because I've obviously done something wrong to make it come back. You know, I live in a world of control, and I know in the past, and I'm trying to hone and upskill my message, right? Because I know in the past I've made it look easy, if you like, you know, the way I talk, because I'm a bit of a cheeky chappy and all that. Right. Trust me, it's been bloody hard work, right? And it's hard work every single day living with this condition, you know. Every day, it's hard.
Yeah, there's no time off, is it? You can't just totally switch off and go on holiday for.
There's no cheat days, you know, and it's, if I, like, I'll give you a for instance, like yesterday was I had quite a busy day yesterday, and I didn't quite do my usual exercise regime and stretching and all that. I had muscle spasms in the night in my legs, and my legs were they were unmanageable this morning.
Right.
It was quite a lot of work to get my legs behaving themselves, if you like. And when I talk about spasms, what happens within, well, one of the things that happens in multiple sclerosis is that the muscles don't get the message to switch off. Switch off. But let's talk about switch off. So there becomes a lot of tension in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it revving up. Because what happens is my legs will, like, uncontrollably start shaking, you know. And it's like, you know, if you're in bed with me, it's like being in a washing machine, you know. But that is, I think there's two things. Number one, I think it was a direct result of me not following my strict exercise regime.
Right.
Two, I think that I get affected by atmospherics. It's quite humid today, mm-hmm. So that affects me as well, you know, and people are affected in different ways with their condition, you know. No there's common traits, but no one's the same. Okay,
wow. So you know, the way the doctors perceive it, would they say that you're in remission, or what's their take on everything?
I have no idea.
Oh, because you haven't seen him.
Well, no, I have absolutely no idea. I mean, my MS nurses, who I saw last week, you know, documented, you know, my progress. They're interested. They're interested in my story because they want to give my story out to more and more people, you know. But I don't know what they would say I am.
Right. Because they do, you know, they can say that MS, it can go into remission.
Yeah. But I believe I think that's a cop-out. I think that's something they say for a situation that they can't explain. Yeah? I am not in remission. I am living with MS every single day. And like I have said to you, if I don't do what I'm supposed to do, it creeps back in.
Right.
Yeah?
So you have to be on the ball, like, you know, if other people... they think, oh, I'm just going to go and have a drink with the lads instead of going to the gym. You can't do that. You can't miss your day.
I don't use the word can't. I choose not to do that.
Yeah.
Or I would choose to go and enjoy the day, but I probably wouldn't drink alcohol.
Right.
No, I don't use them. I just don't use them negative words, them can't.
Yeah.
You know,
well, just, yes, that's half of it. It is how we, and it's interesting, isn't it? It's more about how we talk to ourselves, actually.
Yes.
And what we talk that then how we talk to others. And it's funny that, I mean, did you find, I mean, you did say right at the beginning that you didn't like yourself. So the way you were talking to yourself, can imagine, was terrible, worse than you would ever dream to speak to anybody else. And I'm sure there's lots of people out there that do the same. And I'll, you know, hold my hands up. I'm no different either, working on it. But it's quite fascinating to think that somehow, some way, we have all been almost conditioned through growing up to give ourselves a hard time, which is so bad. I mean, just, you know, it is so crazy. I mean, I know I probably use this analogy a lot because I see it a lot when we, I can't think of the name, Dr. Is it Osh? No, I'm getting confused with Dr. Ashumi. He talks about fasting. There's another Japanese doctor who did the experiment with water. And because, you know, water, when you actually, you know, with a microscope, look at it, the perfectly formed crystals. And then the fact that where they've put bad word, you know, negative words, because at the end of the day, it's all energy, isn't it, that we're putting out. So, you know, your cells aren't hearing words, are they? They're getting the responses from the energy that you're giving. And you can see, so at the end of the day, we're, you know, depending on who you talk to, 60 to 70% to 80% water. So if we're talking badly to ourselves, which is negative energy, those water crystals in our bodies, which is affecting our cells, are going to be all damaged and deformed. Whereas when we're positive words, so positive energy, all these water crystals are perfectly formed. Now, if our bodies are water and we are day in, day out, week in, week out, month in, talking negatively, it would make sense, wouldn't it? That on top of nutrition, sleep, the rest of it, is going to have a bad effect and cause certain ailments. Whereas switching it around, you know, when we look at it from that point of view, because people can very easily dismiss or being positive, that's not going to make any difference. But of course it would make a difference, massive difference, right?
You're not going to get any disagreement out of me, because what you just said there, I completely agree with. You know, you are right. And people don't realise that even when, you know, all of my clients, I try and encourage them, don't even say something negative about yourself, even as a joke. Don't do it, because your body, your subconscious does not know the difference, right? That thought will have a tiny or whatever reaction. There will be a chemical, process created from that thought. Yeah. You know, and I'll go further to say that I believe what is going on in our gut, and there's a lot of research going into, you know, gut microbiome, and I love that research that we've got to be able to clinically prove bleeding obvious. Yeah, you know, what do you need to prove about eating healthy food, drinking good water, exercising and being happy? What do you clinically need to prove about that? It's good for you. Yeah. But what you were saying about, you know, 60 or 70% water, we are also more bacteria than we are human.
Yeah.
And 70% of our immune system lives in our gut. Right? So if you're eating crap, you're not going to have a particularly good immune system, are you?
No. Or taken loads of antibiotics in the past.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's another story, isn't it? You know, that you know, we I reckon me and you could be talking for 6 hours on air. if we put our minds to it, we could easily do that, you know. So let's stay on track, because
I want. So for you, really, for anybody out there who, you know, might be, you know, might have had, you know, it doesn't have to be MS, doesn't have to be, you know, it can be anything really, or just feeling slightly low, feeling a little bit, you know, suffering with a bit of anxiety, suffering with a little bit of depression, and have got to the stage where, yes, you realise that maybe it would be nice to speak to somebody and that you would benefit from getting some help. What do you do? What can you offer people?
I'm a qualified hypnotherapist. I've got a qualification in NLP and coaching and stuff like that. But primarily, when I work with people, I look at the language that they're using, the words that they're using. I look at possible past trauma, you know, that some people don't even realize is there and is creating an issue. And often negative behavior comes from trauma, even addictive behavior, you know, where you're turning to drugs or alcohol or food or whatever. There's a benefit in that, isn't there? It mm-hmm. makes you kind of feel good for a little while, and then you feel like rubbish afterwards, and you've got the guilt and everything, and then you want to do it again to make you feel better again, you know? So every behaviour that we've got, in a way, we believe there's benefit. Yeah. So I look at adjusting people, how people view the world. Yes, we can use some woo-woo stuff if you want to maybe make a few adjustments. Yeah. But fundamentally, I like to tell it how it is, really, I suppose.
Yeah, good. That's what people need. So for those who are, I mean, if you're watching this on YouTube or on the blog, you've got everything down below, all links that you can connect to Chris. But anybody who's just listening on the radio, or if they're listening on the podcast, how do they get in touch with you?
Okay. You can contact me through my website, which is www.upbeatlife.co.uk. There's a button on there that you can actually book a call with me, or I'm not that brilliant at all this sort of stuff, but you know, I'm also on the social medias. You'll find me with my name, Chris Freer. And I'd say that I look forward to speaking to you, really.
So basically, that's what you're doing now. You're still having to obviously live, as you say, you're living with MS, so you still got a lot to do yourself with that. Do you find, I mean, obviously you have improved things, so there has been some kind of reversal, because, well, for starters, the obvious one would be that you were actually in a wheelchair and now you're not. So are things continuing to improve? I mean,
listen, you know, like you.
Oh no, you've frozen. Oh, what's happened? Oh no, you froze. But Ba, ba, ba. Oh, Chris, Chris, Chris. What happened? Oh, no. He's gone. He'll be back. Oh, I'm going to have to edit this one. Yeah. A lot. Yeah. Oh. Come on, last 5 minutes. What should I do? Should I do a bit of a oh, did Ella try and call?
Yeah.
Ella must have called.
Where's she gone?
I don't know where he's gone. Oh my goodness. Come on, bum bum bum. Why am I drinking? Can you grab me a Coca-Cola? I don't know why I'm drinking Coca-Cola. I don't know what we've got to eat today. There's sausages. Yeah. Oh, there's sausages. Sausages and bacon. We've got rolls. Oh, you're right there. There he is. This is why I don't do it live.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what happened.
You just froze. You just suddenly froze. And then that's it. The screen went blank and off you went. It's like, all right, then, Chris, if you don't want to talk to me, don't talk to me. Right. I'm trying to think where we... You did get to say your links and everything. So I'm going to ask you, was there any question
that the answer was? I can tell you what the answer was because I can't remember exactly what you asked me.
Oh.
But I know what my answer was.
How do you know? Go on. What was the answer?
Because I was in mid-flow when it went... What I was saying was that living life with a progressive condition, yeah?
Living life.
In a way, I quite like it because I'm progressively getting...
Oh, that's it. I asked you about... right, okay, hang on.
Oh, hang on.
Right, so Chris, things are improving for you, like because you said, you know, way back then you were actually in a wheelchair. So obviously now you're not. So your health is actually improving. So regardless of, you know, what doctors say that it's, you know, so you're only going down one way or you can go into remission, you are proof that things are getting better. Even though you're having to do these things day in, day out to keep you in optimum health. So what do you feel about your own future with this ailment?
Okay, well, firstly, I think I'm healthier now at 63 than I was at 43. Okay, so, yeah, all right, it's tough. It's tough living with a progressive condition. But the way I see it is I'm going to get progressively better.
As you are.
By the choices that I make.
There we go. So anybody out there that, you know, has or knows anybody, you know, it really is, I think it's really incredibly inspiring to know that, you know, there are alternative, you know, and it's so weird, isn't it, to say that this is an alternative? No. I mean, it's yeah. quite common sense, isn't it, really, to look at what you're feeding your body, what you're feeding your mind, how you feel, how you, like you said, you've got to get up every day and do, you know, so there is a certain, well, a lot of discipline involved. But again, it's all down to what you choose to. So what are your top three tips to give out to somebody who maybe is struggling right now?
I think my top three tips, right, is number one, be aware of the choices that you are making. And by that, I mean, you know, what you're eating, what you're doing, what you're watching, you know, I think often we don't realise what effect that has on us, you know, the media, the news, even films, you know. I don't watch things like that, but I can imagine it's a world of rowing, isn't it? It's a world of rowing, and that's not real life. So, number one, I would say be aware of the choices that you are making. Yeah. Number two, try and love yourself a little bit more. You know, try and get out. And I know this is an old cliche and everything like that, but the beauty of nature and getting out in nature, in the fresh air, is so therapeutic, and it is. It really is. Yeah? So, you know, love yourself a little bit more and get out in the nature. And just be still for a while.
Ah.
And the third one is pay attention to the present on purpose.
I love that.
Right, so really concentrate on what you're doing right now. When you're doing something, don't be thinking about what you're going to be doing later, next week, tomorrow, or what's been bleeding going on in the past that might have, you know, upset you. Pay attention to the present on purpose.
Love that. I think that is... again, far more powerful than most people think, and the walking in nature. Again, it's because we can't see what's going on whilst you're doing in that with your eyes. You might be able to feel it, but, you know, there's so much going on there. That's why you are absorbing so much energy from that. And, yes, the power of the now, absolutely, 100%. If that was taught in schools.
Yeah. Can I just share a little story?
Go for it.
When I was doing my training in mindfulness, really, we were asked to go out and do something that we do regularly, but do it paying attention to the present on purpose. Okay. And I struggled with thinking, what am I going to do? And I thought, oh, actually, do you know what? I often buy joy flowers. Even when I'm not in trouble.
Go figure.
And I thought, this time, you know, what I used to do, I used to go out, pick up a bunch of flowers, paint them, give them, yeah, darling, oh, they're lovely. Well, yeah, boom, right. This time, I paid attention to the flowers and I looked at what I was going to buy and I looked at the detail of the flowers and the petals and the lines, and I really concentrated on it. And I selected the ones that I was going to buy, and I bought them. And I took them home, and I said to my wife, I said, I bought you these, and I've paid attention to them today. Thank you. Do you know what? Those flowers, I've never noticed them before. She put them in a vase and in the kitchen. Every morning I woke up and I'd go downstairs to make her a cup of tea. You know, I'm well trained. But those flowers rewarded me with the most amazing scent every single morning. That was it just enriched me and it just made me feel amazing every day. And I believe the flowers rewarded me because I paid attention to them.
Love that. There you go. Oh, what a story to finish on. So there you go. Top tip, that is, for any guys out there, pay attention when going to buy your other half some flowers. Love that. Thank you so much for your time, Chris. Loving what you do. And yes, you are an absolute inspiration to many people, I am absolutely sure. And so, yeah, wonderful to speak to you, and I would love to speak to you again, actually. So the rest of you, thank you so much for listening. And so I will be back next week with a coffee with Karen. Bye for now.